Suppose you're traveling across the Pennsylvania Turnpike. You're making good time now that you've been legally allowed to travel 70 miles an hour. But as you're going down the road, you come to a sign that says, "Road construction ahead." Imagine that. It happens. Delays may be possible. 5 miles. What do you do? Well, no, wait a minute. Maybe I better rephrase the question. What should you do? Not what do you do? Well, 5 miles ahead, there's no immediate action that you need to take. But you should ask yourself, is this going to affect me? Now, if the construction doesn't start until 5 miles and your exit is only 2 miles ahead, who cares about the construction? Just go on as if nothing was there and you're not the worse for it. Or you might have to ask yourself the question, well, delays are possible. I have to be at such and such a place and I'm running really close on time. Maybe it might be better if I get off at this exit and take a detour around the construction, or maybe I just stay on here and it's shorter this way. And you have to ask yourself that question. Or you just say, who cares? And travel on. It is what it's going to be, and what difference does it make? Well, you get a little on farther on down the road and you see another sign. Left lane closed ahead. What do you do? Oh, wait a minute. What should you do? Now, you're probably going to say you should get in the right lane. Right? No. The standard thing is now stay in your lane until the merge point. And then weave it. But we have people weaving in all over the place. But sooner or later, you have to get in the right lane. You go down the road a little bit farther, and the sign says, reduced speed ahead. Because you're going along 70, and man, you're making good time. And now, in the construction zone, your speed's only going to be 45 miles an hour. Oh, man, 45 miles an hour. Oh, it's going to take forever. What do you do? Well, to make up for the 45 miles an hour, I still have a mile left until that starts. I'll speed up a little bit. And then slow down. Or just disregard the sign altogether and barrel through at 70 miles an hour. Just keep on doing what you're doing. Just one little problem with that. Once you reach the construction zone, if you decide to stay in the left lane, you're more than likely going to hit a concrete barrier. Not generally a good thing to do, especially if you're still doing 70 miles an hour. And if you do get into the right lane and don't reduce your speed, more than likely there is going to be a car there that has these flashing lights on the top of it. And, of course, there's a sign that says fines doubled in the construction zone. And it will cost you dearly. Well, you get pulled over, and the officer says to you, why were you doing 70 miles an hour in a 45 mile an hour zone? You say, I didn't see the signs. Well, they were there. You just didn't pay attention to the signs. Why did the State Department of Transportation put those signs out there in the first place? It's because they wanted to make life miserable for you, right? PennDOT doesn't like you at all. They hate you. And consequently, they put those signs out there to express their hatred to... No, actually, they put those signs out there because they actually do care for you, and they care for those that are working on the highway, and they want to see you alive. But there are necessary things in order for that to happen. If you don't get in out of the left lane, you're probably going to be in an accident. If you don't slow down, you're going to be pulled over. And the signs are there to keep those actions of judgment from coming against you. Now, God has warnings like road signs of judgment throughout Scripture. Why? Well, some people say that if you preach on the judgment of God, it's because you're a vindictive person. It's because you hate people. It's because you think you're holier than thou, or that God doesn't love people. The fact of the matter is, those signs or those warnings of judgment are just like those road signs to keep you from disaster, not that you would suffer disaster. But if you ignore them, it's going to happen. No getting out of it. Now, if it doesn't concern you, well, then you get off at the right exit and you just keep going on. This morning, as we come to Jeremiah chapter 6, there are at least four warning signs that were given to the nation of Israel concerning a coming judgment of God. And I want you to take a look at these this morning with me. Kind of relate them to the analogy of the road signs and the construction ahead. The first warning sign is found in the first 9 verses of Jeremiah 6. O you children of Benjamin, gather yourselves to flee out of the midst of Jerusalem. And blow the trumpet in Tekoa and set up a sign of fire in Beth something there. For evil appeareth out of the north and great destruction. I have likened the daughter of Zion to a comely and delicate woman. The shepherds with their flocks shall come unto her. They shall pitch their tents against her round about. They shall feed every one in his place. Prepare ye war against her. Arise, let us go up at noon. Woe unto us, for the day goeth away, for the shadows of the evening are stretched out. Arise, and let us go by night, and let us destroy her palaces. For thus hath the Lord of hosts said, hew down trees and cast them out against Jerusalem. This is the city to be visited. She is holy oppression in the midst of her. As a fountain casts out her waters, so she casts out her wickedness. Violence and spoil is heard in her. Before me continually is grief and wounds. Be thou instructed, O Jerusalem, lest my soul depart from thee, lest I make thee desolate, a land not inhabited. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, they shall thoroughly glean the remnant of Israel as a vine. Turn back thy hand as a grape gatherer into the baskets. First warning sign, construction ahead, road construction. And here's the thing. Trouble is going to happen, according to verse 1, in Jerusalem. And the instruction is, get out of town. Remove yourself. The army is coming, and it's going to be great destruction. Well, why is that? Well, according to verse 2, in the eyes of the Babylonians, Jerusalem is like a very beautiful and fair woman. As a man would say, oh, look at her, she is desirous. Jerusalem is going to be a desirous place to capture. Verse 3 says, the shepherds, and the shepherds here are the military leaders, and their flocks, which would be the armies, shall come unto them. They shall pitch their tents round about. In other words, they're going to encircle the city. No one goes in, no one comes out. They'll be held captive there for a time. Verse 4 says that they are going to prepare war against her. And they're going to say, let us go up at noon. The idea of this is that's when the sun is the hottest. The intensity of the warfare is going to be with great heat. Arise. Verse 5, let us go down by night. Let us destroy her palaces. Generally, in those days, warfare only took place during the daylight hours. They needed the sun to see. It was very difficult, if not impossible, to wage a war or to have a battle at nighttime. But the Babylonians were going to continue this into the night, which speaks of the longevity of this judgment that's coming. It's going to be hot and heavy. It's going to be long. Well, the people in Jerusalem said, "We've got this high wall, kind of like the walls of Jericho. And that wall will keep these people out." Well, the Lord gave to the mind of the Babylonians, cast down or hew down, chop down some trees, and all you have to do is pile them up together or make a ladder out of them. You can get over those walls, no problem. Because here's a city that is ready for judgment. As a fountain is constantly putting out water, Jerusalem was constantly putting out wickedness and violence. And the warning is this: if you don't change according to verse 8, there's not going to be anything that's left of you. Completely uninhabited. Verse 9 says that normally a person, when they're picking the fruit of the vine, the grapes, they'll look at some of the grapes and they'll say, "Oh, that one's too small, I'll leave it." Or, "That one is damaged, I'll leave that one." Basically what verse 9 is saying, we're going to strip the tree clean, or the vine clean. That's how bad the warning is. Well, we've got a warning sign. Someone could say, "Oh, that doesn't apply to me. That applies to somebody else." And we tend to do that when we hear words of warning, don't we? I want you, if there's somebody on your left, I want you to turn and look at that person. Everyone turn to the person on their left. Left is that way, Wally. Okay? Now, if there's somebody on your right, turn and look at the person on your right. You've just looked at the persons to whom this message applies. It does not apply to the person you see in the mirror, right? That's how we look at things. It's always pertaining to somebody else, but not me. And we say, "Well, that doesn't bother me." And maybe it doesn't bother you. Maybe your exit's coming up, so to speak, and these are not things that are true of you, and that's fine. No problem there. Maybe it is something that's pertaining to the person on your left or your right. But then we come along and we find a second warning sign beginning at verse 10. "To whom shall I speak and give warning, that they may hear? Behold, their ear is uncircumcised, and they cannot hearken. Behold, the word of the Lord is unto them a reproach. They have no delight in it. Therefore I am full of fury of the Lord. I am weary with holding it in. I will pour it out upon the children abroad and upon the assembly of young men together. For even the husband with the wife shall be taken, the aged with him that is full of days. And their houses shall be turned unto others, with their fields and wives together. For I will stretch out my hand upon the inhabitants of the land, saith the Lord. For from the least of them unto the greatest of them, every one is given to covetousness. And from the prophet even unto the priest, every one deals falsely. They have healed also the hurt of the daughter of my people, slightly, saying, Peace, peace, when there is no peace. Were they ashamed when they committed abomination? Nay, they were not at all ashamed, neither could they blush. Therefore they shall fall among them that fall. At that time that I visit them, they shall be cast down, saith the Lord. Thus saith the Lord, Stand ye in the ways, and see, and ask for the old paths. Where is the good way? And walk therein, and you shall find rest for your souls. But they said, We will not walk therein. Also I set watchmen over you, saying, Hearken to the sound of the trumpet. But they said, We will not hearken. He's asking the question here, does this apply to you? And of course, these people are already saying, no, that doesn't apply to me. Why weren't they thinking that? Well, verse 10 says they are uncircumcised of ears. Excess skin. I like to think of it this way. A buildup of ear wax. It's not that they couldn't hear, because they've allowed a lot of stuff to interfere with their hearing. They had more pressing needs. And consequently, they were not listening to the signs that were along the roadside saying, you know, construction ahead. And Jeremiah is saying, in fact, God is saying in verse 11, look, you're getting close. I'm weary of holding in. You're going to be there soon. You need to get off this lane and into the right lane. It's time to merge into the... And the people said, no, we can keep on going the way we're going. We don't have to slow down. We don't have to change lanes. Wait a minute. Who's the destruction coming upon? Look at verse 11. I will pour it out upon the children abroad and upon the assembly of young men together. The assembly of young men together. Now, what would young men be doing more than likely? Well, they'd be in the army. They would be defending Israel. Well, that's natural. It certainly would apply to them. For even the husband with the wife shall be taken. Hold on a second. What's significant about that? Well, in the Old Testament law, when a man married a woman, for the first part of their marriage relationship, the man was exempt from going to war. So when it says here, the husband with the wife shall be taken, we're talking not about just the soldiers, but the soldiers that stayed at home, or would be soldiers. The end of verse 11, the aged with him that is full of days. Older people that would be exempt from serving, because probably they already have. What verse 11 is saying is, in a normal situation, when you're going to war, you make war with the other country's armies. You don't attack the civilians. But God is saying, not just the armies that will be taken, civilians also. Verse 12, and their houses shall be turned unto others. Wait a minute, that belongs to me. No, it doesn't. It belongs to God. And their fields and their wives together will I stretch out my hand upon the inhabitants of the land, unto the least of, well, maybe the least, you know, the low life. They deserve this. Unto the greatest of them. Wait a minute. Great people don't deserve judgment, do they? Unless they're in Washington, D.C. But that's another story. But notice it says, from the least to the greatest. That includes anyone in between. In other words, the whole of the people. No matter whether you're rich or poor, whether you're in the military or out of the military, whether you're married or unmarried, whether you're religious or irreligious, verse 14, even the priests and the prophets disobeyed because they were saying peace, peace to the people. When God is saying, no, judgment, judgment. You hear this today. God is a God of justice. He is a holy God. When a person sins, there are consequences to sin. But you'll have some who call themselves ministers, pastors, preachers, priests, rabbis, whatever, who will say, oh no, God is a God of love, and He would never judge. So just go right on in your sin. And consequently, people do. Verse 15, even to the point of committing abominations before God, with no reservation. In fact, they're not even ashamed at all. They don't even blush. Now, let me think of something. What's one thing that the Bible calls an abomination before God? Homosexuality is an abomination before God. And today, we have Gay Pride Weeks. Wait a minute. I'm proud that I'm committing an abomination. Verse 15. That's exactly what's going on here. And while others may not say, well, that's a lifestyle that I don't believe in, but they're allowed to do whatever they do. I'll allow the sin too, and not speak against it. Thus saith the Lord, stand in the way. Go back and look. Was this always the case with the nation of Israel? Was there a time when God was blessing and you were living differently? Go back. Get in the right lane. But they said, we will not walk therein. We will not hearken to the sound of the... Let's just keep staying where we are, doing what we're doing, and all will be fine. Well, then there comes another warning, verse 18. Therefore hear, ye nations, and know, O congregation, what is among them. Hear, O earth, behold, I will bring evil upon this people, even the fruit of their thoughts, because they have not hearkened unto my words, nor to my law, but rejected it. To what purpose cometh there to me incense from Sheba, sweet cane from a far country? Your burnt offerings are not acceptable, nor your sacrifices sweet unto me. Therefore thus saith the Lord, behold, I will lay stumbling blocks before this people, and the fathers and the sons together shall fall upon them. The neighbor and his friend shall perish. Thus saith the Lord, behold, a people cometh from the north country. A great nation shall be raised from the sides of the earth. They shall lay hold on the bow and spear. They are cruel and have no mercy. Their voice roareth like the sea, and they ride upon horses set in array as men for war against thee, O daughter of Zion. We have heard the fame thereof. Our hands wax feeble. Anguish has taken hold of us, and pain is a woman in travail. Go not forth into the field, nor walk by the way, for the sword of the enemy and fear is on every side. So judgment comes. So I get to the construction zone, and I don't change lanes, or I don't slow down. Nothing will happen to me. Wait a minute. Hold the bus. I'm bringing a people against you because you won't listen to my words. And all your religious activity won't stop it. I don't care how wonderful your offerings are. I don't care how pious you may be. And the people were still going into the temple and still offering the offerings. And some of them were offering some very costly stuff. Incense from Sheba and sweet cane from a far country. That was expensive. And it was like, oh, we can buy our way out of judgment. We'll just pay the fine and everything will be okay. No, the fine's too great. Therefore, the Lord says, I'm going to lay stumbling blocks. Everybody's going to fall. This country that's coming from the north is a great nation. They will lay hold of the bow and the spear. Anyone ever get shot with a bow and arrow? Anyone ever suffer a spear, a javelin going through them? Well, then you'll just have to imagine. Do you think it's delightful? Do you think maybe there just might be just a little bit of pain associated with it? Where'd Allie go? Oh, she's in the nursery. My granddaughter yesterday had a little oral surgery done, and I was talking with her before Sunday school started about the experience, because I just had some oral surgery, same type, just a couple of weeks ago. And I said, how was it? Oh, she said, the only thing I felt was when they gave me the Novocaine. She said, it wasn't too bad in the gum, but when they put it into the roof of her mouth, she said, that really hurt. And I said, yeah, I know. I didn't feel a thing either. Exactly the same. Just think, that little needle, just a tiny, thin little needle pricking, just barely pricking the surface of the skin and shooting stuff in there that's supposed to numb you so that you don't feel anything. caused a lot of pain. Just imagine if that was a bow or a spear. Yikes. They are cruel. They have no mercy. My oral surgeon said, I wish I could do something different. But he said, there's no way I can get around giving you this shot. And he tried as best he could. And he really did a pretty good job. I mean, it wasn't really bad at all. But these guys say, it's going to hurt. No mercy. Their voice roars like the sea. Terrifying. The visual display of riding on horses is set in, I'm just going to make you tremble. And consequently, verse 24 says, the hands are going to wax feeble. They're going to be shaking. They're going to be in pain as a woman who is ready to give birth. Don't go out, because if you do, the sword of the enemy and fear is on every side. There's no escape. Third warning sign. You would think by now the people would say, well, you know what? We've got to do something here. But they didn't. And now comes the final. Verse 26, O daughter of my people, gird thee with sackcloth and wallow thyself in ashes. Make thee mourning as for an only son, most bitter lamentation, for the spoils shall suddenly come upon us. I have set thee for a tower. The word tower there might better be translated as a person who is involved in the refining of silver. A tower and a fortress among my people, that thou mayest know and try their way. They are all grievous revolters, walking with slanderers. They are brass and iron. They are all corruptors. The bellows are burned. The lead is consumed of the fire. The founder melteth in vain. For the wicked are not plucked away. Reprobate silver shall men call them, because the Lord hath rejected them. What this sign is saying is, okay, the day of judgment has come. You're up to the construction zone. You're still in the wrong lane. You're still going too fast. You haven't heeded the warnings. And now judgment is coming. And all you can do is mourn and weep and suffer it. The nation as a whole, the city as a whole, was supposed to be fine silver, valuable. And as a smelter would take the ore and put it into the fire and remove the dross from it and make it pure and ready for use, so the people were to be that way. They were to be refined over time, and the sin of their lives was to be removed. But now, what God is saying here, the fire of judgment is going to be so hot that the bellows that are used to make the fire hot are going to be consumed by the fire. The fire has gotten that hot. It's burning up everything. It's burned up the silver. And the only thing that's left is the dross, the stuff that nobody wants, that's useful for nothing, and consequently rejected of God. It's too late. We got to the construction zone, and an accident took place. In this case, a fatal one. Going at 70 miles an hour into a concrete barrier. Because no one slowed down. No one changed lanes. God is a God of absolute justice. And when sin is in a person's life, it cannot go unpunished. Or God can't be God. And that's why all throughout the Bible, there's warning signs. Hey, look, construction ahead. Maybe this pertains to you. Now, if you're getting off at the next exit and it doesn't pertain to you, that's fine. But if it pertains to you, if it's something, here's what you do about it. I don't need to pay attention to that. and you go right on through. Well, here's another warning sign. No, I don't need to pay attention to that. And you go right on through, and sooner or later, judgment comes. In the nature of God, there are two types of judgment. The first is eternal. It deals with a person's relationship with God. Jesus Christ said this in John chapter 3, "Except a man be born again, he cannot see the kingdom of heaven." Do you know what it means to be born again? I'm going to ask that question this morning. I'm not asking you to look at the person on your left or your right. I'm asking you, do you know what it means to be born again? Can you say with absolute certainty, "Yes, I am born again. I know what it means. I know it's true of me." Well, good. You're getting off the next exit before the judgment comes. But if you don't know what it means to be born again, if you keep going in the direction you're going, judgment is coming. It's eternal damnation. And I don't stand here and say that to belittle you. I say that because it's a warning. And God wants you to know what it means to be born again. And some of you, if you don't know what that means, might head out of this auditorium today and say, "I don't know and I don't care to know." And you go right on home and living your life in the same way. If you do not know what it means to be born again, when this service is over, you come to me. You come to Jim, or you come to Roy, or you come to Blair, and you say, "What does it mean to be born again? I want to know. I don't want to crash." But then there is also temporal judgment. Judgment for sin in the lives of those who have been born again. Judgment that may be temporal in nature. For example, David in the Old Testament sinned with Bathsheba. His life became very, very difficult. I was sharing with the Sunday school class this morning. David actually, in today's term, was suffering from clinical depression. Now, I don't like today's term, but that's what it was. When he repented of his sin, Psalm 51 says, "Restore unto me the joy of my salvation." He didn't say, "Restore unto me my salvation." "Restore unto me the joy of it. I have been living in sin. What happened? I confessed it. I forsook the sin. And now I want to return to the place where there's no more judgment ahead of me. I want to get back into left-hand lane. I want to go 70 miles an hour for the Lord. I want to enjoy this travel." But if David never repented and confessed it, it could have been bad news for him. The warning signs are there, not to make your life miserable, to make your life great. Don't neglect them. God is speaking to you this morning. If there is a sin in your life that you need to deal with, if you don't know what it means to be born again, ask. Get in the right lane. Let's pray. Father, I take no joy, no pleasure for myself in standing here preaching a message of judgment. But I will take pleasure if it meets the needs of someone here this morning. I will take greater pleasure if it meets the needs of everyone here this morning. Lord, maybe there are those in this fellowship, in fact, I'm sure there are those in this fellowship this morning that are living their lives as best as they can in obedience to your will for them. Judgment is not the issue. They can say, I'm getting off at the next desk. This doesn't apply to me. But I wouldn't be surprised, Lord, if there are some here this morning who would say, I don't even know what it means to be born again. Or others who would say, oh, I know there's something that I should be doing that I'm not, or something that I am doing that I shouldn't, that I need to deal with. And Lord, if there even be one or as many as there might be that fall into either of those categories, may they not leave this building without having dealt with the issue. Lord, make us not like the people of Jerusalem who had uncircumcised ears. But may we have lives that truly, truly, truly glorify you and bring great joy to us. For I ask in the Savior's name.